Welcome to RCN Sports Talk, broadcasting live from Buffalo Wild Wings, a spectacular show here at Buffalo Wild Wings on Grape Street in Whitehall. It is going to be a fabulous show here. We have some special guests that we're going to be introducing in just a few minutes. But first, we start with the co-host of the program and the man who's been walking on eggshells here for the last hour or so, regretting everything nasty he has ever said about Whitehall football over the last 30 years. Mr. Joseph Gray.
I have a lot of great memories of Whitehall. When I coached at Liberty, Whitehall was that was always a formidable game. Days of Joe Garrincer and some of the things that happened back in those days. I mean, it was, you know, we coached against Millen and some of those guys, so we had a lot of good memories with Whitehall. And it was always, and I even played against Whitehall when I was in high school.
Well, I know. I mean, that's a concern because you grew up in the Allentown School District. You graduated from Parkland. You're a Liberty homer. So those are three schools that Whitehall people, you know, may come in conflict with.
I know, but I have a lot of friends in Whitehall. I still go there. I bought a boat there once.
We're going to see if that's true on tonight's program. First of all, let's introduce our panelists here for segment number one. And it's headed up by Tony Coca, who is not only know a thing or two about Whitehall football, but has done a great job putting this show together. For our first segment, Tony Coca, he's here with someone who looks very similar to him, Mike Coca, Rich Gerula, and also Bill Natt here for segment number one. But, Tony, this has got to be a special day for you to see some familiar faces.
It's always a special day at Whitehall. Whitehall is a special school, a special history of Whitehall football. Joe, I didn't know Whitehall even existed when you played at the time.
I can remember Whitehall in 1955. And Gary, who is sitting in the audience, will remember those days. You were too young.
So you played against the Willie Piff,
yes,
the real good coach, has the most wins in Whitehall history of any coach out there.
Well, they weren't. Copley was not part of the Whitehall school district back
then.
We played Copley too.
Copley joined the district, if I remember, Whitehall, 1965, 1966.
Yeah.
We joined. It was Whitehall, and then they tried to change the name Zephyrs to Zephcats. They tried all kind of things.
Well, they did
but
it all.
It's always the Zephyrs. And here we are in Zephyrland, folks.
Well, back in those days, Whitehall was in the Lehigh Valley League, and we were in Parkland. We were in the Lehigh Northampton League. They were two separate leagues.
Yeah, and it was. I played in the 60, 64, 65, 6, and 7. And so I remember that well. Yeah. You know, it was Slatington, not Northern Lehigh. It was Lehighton. We had those schools. And it was always Whitehall made a lot of enemies on the football team, on the football field. And I think that's because they were so competitive for a small school. Still one of the smallest schools in the public school. Yeah. Still making those enemies.
Well, you have three special people here off to your right, too. And, Mike, I want to ask you, I know I've been prepping you, and we want lots of dirt on Tony here tonight. But what was it like? First of all, we'll start there. What was it like to play for Tony a few years ago?
It depends if you want the honest answer or the politically correct answer.
Yeah, honest.
The honest answer is there's two kinds of coaches in this world when they got their sons as a player for them. The one whose son can do everything right, and the one whose son can do nothing right. And
let's see if we can guess which one this is.
I can speak for myself, and I can speak for my brother John. We were both the two that could do nothing right no matter what happened. Just a matter of, we even had the rule when you got home from practice or a game, Mom instituted the no football at the supper table rule, because it was just, you know my dad, you know his temper, multiply it by two. Throw that in a teenage body with some hormones, and you get some fireworks at a table. So it's a lot of interesting things happened. So that's why that rule was instituted. But as far as honest answer, I mean, fantastic coach. And in all seriousness, you couldn't be more proud of your dad the entire time you're playing for him. Things are always tough, but you know that it's a Whitehall attitude. You just it's ingrained in you from your grandparents or your parents on down that. It's a blue-collar work ethic, and you're going to find out from what he's saying to you, how he's saying it to you, you're going to become that blue-collar player the entire time.
Now, Tony, you have a mic there. You could stop him at any time, so I guess that was true. I was shocked he didn't jump in there to dispute some of that.
Don't be so polite, Tony. We know.
There were many times I would come home, and my wife would say, your supper's downstairs. They're up here. Stay away from the kids. I don't even want you near them. There was a story one time, and I'll bring Gary into this. We were playing Northampton High School, and Michael got nailed in a pile, and I saw him get Ben back. And I thought, oh, my God, he just blew out his knee. So he's out there. He's writhing in pain. He's going back and forth. So as a coach, a lot of times you run out when you saw the injured player. So I go out there, and Michael's, my leg, my leg, my leg. And Jags, who was our athletic trainer at the time, she goes, Michael, which leg? My leg, my leg. So I grabbed them by the shoulder pads. I pulled them up to me, and I go, you got two legs. Pick one. And I jam them back down. So I go home that night, and I'm watching the rebroadcast, and Dick and Gary were doing the broadcast, and they were saying, there's Michael Koga trying to get up, and his father just keeps pushing him back down because Michael wants to get back in the game. And if only the people knew what was said out there.
I can honestly tell you that I was not going to be able to get back up at that point. That leg was in pain.
Now, Rich, of course, you've been long associated with Whitehall Sports, too. In fact, we were talking about some stories about the Whitehall Mall before some of these, a lot of these stores over here to our right were even built. So what does it mean like to think about Whitehall Sports and some of these great stories we've been sharing tonight?
Well, the two gentlemen sitting on each side of me were part of the Whitehall Maulers. That was the year we went 10-0, and it was when they were reconstructing the Whitehall Mall, and I remember the entire offensive line. I don't know if it was a good thing or a bad thing, but the entire offensive line was on bulldozer. They were calling us the Whitehall Maulers front page, and I'm like, ooh, this Tony, this could be real bad because people are going to be gunning for us. But, you know, the stories that I share, I'd love to share some of the stories with you on the side. I can't do it, I don't think, over the air, but they were great. I mean, I spent the best parts of my life were when I was associated as a player with Tony. Tony was a teacher, my teacher. He was a player. I was his player. And then I coached with him. How great of that can you have? Can anyone have to coach with your teacher, your coach, and then eventually being a head coach and coach underneath him? It was a great experience. When he gave me the job as a young individual, I sat there shaking in my boots, and he looked at me and said, son, I'm telling you something right now. The O-line is your business. He said, I'm not going to get involved unless I see it. And as a young coach, he taught me how to learn how to coach on the fly. And I have nothing but great things to say about him as a head coach. Now, as a person and personal things, we did some lot of things. Like I said, I wish I could tell you all the clinic stories.
It's a family show, Richie.
I know. But, you know, and just like any other football staff or any other family, did we have our arguments? I wish I could share those arguments with you in the locker room. But you know what? When it's all said and done, when we walk out in that field, we're all on the same page. So it was a great experience. I wish I could relive it. I many times I says, come on back. Come on back to being a head coach. And he's like, I can't do it. He says, my time is done. I'm past.
Well, I got to tell you, as an outsider, a guy that wasn't part of the Whitehall scene, there were a couple places that you always loved to play, and then there were some that you hated to play at. I got to tell you, Whitehall was one of the places we did not like playing, and it's because we never... It was always an adventure. I mean, you had to get across the track where they want to punch you as you go by. And you got to come out of that locker room and you get on that field. And when you played Whitehall, you knew you were going to get tested. I mean, even the teams that weren't that good would test you. They would hit you. And that's how we always gauged a program. Who would hit you and who would not hit you? And Whitehall was always one that was going to hit you.
I got so many. I send a lot of emails out and a lot of things on Facebook and text to the ex-players saying, come on out today, talk about Whitehall football. I see a few of them. I see John Lobb over here, who I was cutting my teeth with Joe Gerenser, the freshman coach, and there's Mike Brusco over there. So when you're talking about Whitehall tradition, that's part of it over there. I see a couple of my staff members. I saw Mike Yadish come in here. I remember Mike starting off. I started off under Joe Gerenser, and I'll tell you what, I was just talking to his son, Joseph. Now, his son, Joseph, was on the undefeated team in 76, and Joe always said, he goes, that team, that was special. And I go, yeah, I was just a freshman coach. We were just on the side watching all this. But it's really funny. If you look at Joey right now, Joey went to West Point. He didn't play football at West Point. graduated from the academy, the whole bit. Now his hair is down to his shoulder. He's driving tractor trailer, and he just talks about it's just the blue collar attitude. He went back to the blue collar attitude that Whitehall has. I used to say to these guys all the time, we come to work with a lunch pail. It's a lunch pail. Yeah. It's a beat up lunch pail. We're just that cement mill kid. We're that steel kid. We're that guy. And the parents in Whitehall were very supportive of our program at the time, too. I can honestly say that the amount of incidents that I've had with parents, I could count on less than one hand.
Well, you know, while you're talking about Whitehall and some of the influences that were there, you know, I don't know if people realize this, but organized weight rooms started there. John Bendekovitz started organized weightlifting in the Valley. Right. That goes way back.
Right over here at the Jefferson Street Playground.
And that's when it started.
That's where it started. Yep. Here at Jefferson Street Playground. They used to, the kids leave the school, get in their cars, drive down the playground, down to the playground, into the building here. He had the weights set up there, and that's where they learned. And I remember at that time, too, again, you're the freshman coach, so you're not really involved with a lot of things that the varsity's doing, much like today where a lot of the coaches are involved in everything. But everyone was, Whitehall's always on steroids. It was always the steroids. It wasn't steroids. Yeah. It was corned beef, grass-fed cattle learned how to lift weights in
You were doing things that nobody else was doing. I mean, our kids in Bethlehem, they were lifting at the Y and at the boys' club on their own. We didn't have an organized weight room. I don't think anybody did until you guys started, and that was the early 70s. I mean, that's when it started. Up until that time, the Hartensteins and guys like that we had, they lifted at the boys' club. That's where they did it.
Yeah, and John started it, and the kids bought into it, today it just keeps going. I remember when I was a head coach, they were building a new field house. We had to go down to a bus garage. Remember that, Rich? Mm-hmm. We cleared out two bus stalls. And actually, when they built the new weight room, our kids wanted to stay in the bus garage. That's the kind of mentality it was. Why do we want something modern? We love this place, the old sweaty, greasy bus garage where we are. Now, today, the bus garage is gone. They have an auxiliary gym built there. Don't forget about Billy down there.
Well, you guys changed the culture.
I already talked to him. But getting back to the weight program, if you look back in the early 80s, if you even go through the entire decade of the 80s, we were always powerlifting. That was the big thing. That was the big strength training. We were always state champions. Champions in powerlifting. That was a sport that really wasn't recognized, but it was great for football. The old push-pull strength training program. I mean, now obviously we're more advanced, but I see it starting to come back to that.
And one more thing, I'd be remiss if I didn't say the parents of the players were behind us 100% all the time. I mean, this Whitehall still has the type of parents that when we would yell at them, they'd go home and they'd get yelled at worse. There was no coddling. I remember the parents would come up to me and say, don't take any crap from my kid. If he gives you any crap, you just dish it out. You're the football coach. They're here to play football. And that's the way the Whitehall kid progress, and I think it's still that way. Not quite probably what happened. I still remember when I was coaching at Muhlenberg, and Kurt Schneider said, I don't care if you grab them by the face mask and pull them at you, just remember they're bigger than you and stronger than you.
Yeah, Bill, I want to bring him into the conversation too, and you can talk about your career and what that Whitehall tradition meant to you.
Well, as everyone speaks with tradition with Whitehall, it's completely blue collar, working hard. I mean, that was absolutely instilled from day one when I first started playing there. I mean, you go to the weight room, you put your time in, you work. And that's something that sticks with you throughout your life. I mean, just having a positive attitude to go in, work yourself to get better. I mean, one of the memories I have that supports that is, I think it was our senior year, we were practicing and we did something to not make coach happy. So we kicked like everyone off the field. It was like, okay, everyone out. Like us being who we're like, well, we would need to practice. We need to get better. We went back out on the field without the coaches just to practice, just to get it right. And then, I mean, that's something that was instilled from having the coaches push you and say, this is how you got to work. You need to work to get better. You're not going to get better sitting around doing nothing.
And I remember throwing them off the field. They walked back out and started practicing. I turned to my coaches, we better get out there to liability. Right away, the lawyers start coming in there. We better go out there and teach them something about that. But they were that type of Whitehall has that type of mentality. If you threw them off the field, they'd go out and work on their own.
I was just going to say, you know, you changed Whitehall changed the culture of football in the Valley. You know, like Warren Harris back at Liberty back in the 60s came in with the spinner series, changed the culture. Woody Petchel, single wing, Penn Ardle, changed the culture. Al Urdesy, short punt, Northampton, changed the culture. Whitehall changed the culture in a sense with the weights, and that was all totally unheard of up until that point.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize, like, when Matt Millen, I was Matt's freshman coach, Matt weighed 122 pounds his freshman year. He was a fullback. And then as he progressed, like everybody else, Matt was 200 pounds his sophomore year. He stole the keys to the field house, and he would get into the field house and lift on his own on Saturday and Sunday when everybody had off. And Matt lived right down the street from me. When I first got married, I lived up on 3rd Street in Hockey. We were a block away. I used to drive Matt to school a lot of times, and there would be Matt. He'd have a jar of peanut butter with Knox blocks going to school. And if you asked Matt, right, if Matt was here right now, nothing would change with him. He still wears the stupid blue jeans, the stupid flannel shirt. He's still that Whitehall kid. He has that mentality.
You know, and it's amazing because you're talking about Matt Millen and Scott Cove. All these Whitehall great athletes, they have similar stories about just going out, working, driven kind of something from within, kind of driving them to work hard, to work and practice and just better themselves year in and year out.
Well, it was the Gerentzers, the Bendekovitzes, you know, of the world that started this, and they instilled this work ethic into the kids. I just happened to come in and just inherit what we had. I remember that first year, I went in there scratching my head saying, oh my God, we got like 40 kids. How are we ever going to win? But my mentality was, we're going to play 22 kids. So we put 11 on offense and 11 on defense, and the next year we had 70 kids out for the team.
Yeah, real quick, Rich, you want to add something there, too?
Yeah, and not only did the weightlifting culture change, I think the big change, getting away from the 80s where it was 3 yards in a cloud of dust, Tony really opened up the passing game. And I think that is where, early on in Tony's career, We were successful because we were able to throw the ball. Tony would spread defenses out, make them defend the whole field. And I remember Joe Gerentzer saying to me right before he passed was, he said, Rich, I'm going to tell you something right now. He says, you threw more in one game than I threw in a whole year at Whitehall.
All right, our special guests are members from the Whitehall football team. We're going to be talking with more special people coming up on a rain-soaked edition of RCN Sports Talk, broadcasting live from Buffalo Wild Wings. Some more special guests. We're going to talk about Joe Gerentzer and some other great Whitehall football traditions right after this timeout.
You are listening to the RCN Sports Talk podcast. Send us a comment or question, or to participate in the program, email us at rcnsportstalk@rcn.com. And we might read and respond on an upcoming episode. You can also send us possible show topics and future guest suggestions by emailing chris.michael@rcn.net. If you catch the show live, you can call us at 1-844-234-4488 on Thursday evenings between 7 and 8 p.m. That number again, 1-844-234-4488. Stay tuned for more of the RCN Sports Talk podcast. Listening to the RCN Sports Talk podcast. Send us a comment or question, or to participate in the program, email us at rcnsportstalk@rcn.com, and we might read and respond on an upcoming episode. If you catch the show live, you can call us at 1-844-234-4488 on Thursday evenings between 7 and 8 p.m. Stay tuned for more of the RCN Sports Talk podcast. We'll be right back.
patio of Buffalo Wild Wings on Grape Street in Whitehall. Joining us again for this segment, of course, Tony Coca, former coach and member of the RCN sports staff, and football season just a couple weeks away. We're excited about that.
Can't wait. Best time of the year.
And Bill Nant, Rich Gerula, and Mike Coca joining us again for this segment. I know there's a bunch of stories that you guys want to talk about, and I'm just going to lead into this about Joe Gerrans or your memories about Joe and his legacy at Whitehall.
Well, I cut my teeth with Joe, as I said before. I was his freshman coach, then I moved up to the JV, and then I moved over to Muhlenberg during his tenure. But Joe taught me a lot of football. You talk about discipline. Well, some of the things that Joe used to do is that every kid had to have their shoes polished. Their shirts are always tucked in, even at practice. I mean, he would stop at practice just to have somebody tuck in their shirt. He was just it was discipline. He's there. You discipline yourself, you're going to be disciplined throughout the game. But Joe was Joe, and there wasn't a lot of ways that you convinced Joe. I'm going to turn this one over to Rich. Joe never ducked anybody. I remember him and George Curry trying to get together, and George wanted Joe to play up there, and Joe said, no, you bring the Bulldogs down here. And they were fighting over where they were going to play Berwick. And what ends up happening, that one fell through, and we end up going up to Mount Carmel. And then, Rich, you can take it from here, because this was almost hilarious, but it was sad at the same time.
Okay, Rich, take it away.
I just remember, well, to end the game, we're winning the game, and there's no timeouts left. And I'm in the huddle, and I hear a play call, 236 flat. And I'm like, all we had to do was run the ball like one or two times. Game was over, we win. 236 flat. Well, all right, it's a rollout. I'm in the huddle. He knows what he's doing. All of a sudden, Mike Dimmick picks the ball off and goes 99 yards for a touchdown. They win the game. We were ranked first and second in the state at that time. Yeah. And obviously, they went ahead of us. But I remember after the game getting rocks thrown at us, going back to the bus. I remember Stevie Gerrancer, his son, trying to hold him off from going after the crowd, getting into a fight. Well, we finally made it back to the bus. But the funny thing about that story was, I remember films. Now, you got to understand Joe Gerrancer at films. Joe Gerrancer is ruthless. If you do something wrong, he's going to run that playback 75 times, and he will point out your problem every time. And finally, you're sitting there saying, you don't say it to him. You say, all right, coach, I got it. Can we move on to the next play? But I remember him after that interception saying, Gerula, what are you doing standing all the way down at the 5-yard line when he's running down the field? Dimmick was at the 50, was a state qualifier track guy. I ain't catching him, all right? I'm not catching him. So, of course, I didn't have a comment for that. But Monday at practice, I remember he brought us around the goalpost, and he said, guys, I'm going to tell you something right now. He goes, for calling that play, he goes, I'm going to turn around, I'm going to hold on to this pole, and every single one of you guys could come up here and kick me right in the butt. And then our quarterback started laughing. Jeff Terbetsky, I hope he's not here. I'm sorry I called you out on that. And he's laughing. And all of a sudden, Gerrancer turns around and looks at him. He goes, Jeff, what are you laughing at? You threw the pass. You should be up here hanging with me on this pole. But that was funny. That kind of broke it up, and then we went on from there. But, yeah, that was a tough loss. That was a tough loss to swallow on that one, because that took us from number one, and we went right down.
Yeah, I remember as a freshman coach, you don't have a lot to do. You just like pick up the toilet paper that the kids leave behind, scout team, and that kind of stuff. And I remember I'm starving to death because we had practice. Then we got on the school bus, and we take that 3-hour ride by school bus through Centralia up to Mount Carmel.
And we're hungry.
And we're hungry, and we were going to stop to eat on the way home. And I couldn't wait to stop to eat because I'm like, oh, you know, the fat guy's hungry here, Joe. And Joe looks at me and, the hell with these guys. We're going right home. And every time we passed the Burger King, I was just like salivating on the windows, one of those things. But Joe was an excellent mentor. I learned a lot about teaching. I think in the early stage of my coaching career, I was a screamer yeller. You know, they never could do anything right. And I remember Joe pulled me aside. He goes, look, if you're going to scream at them, teach them. And it caught. And it was like, okay, they got to know what they're doing before –
You know, and what it was we ended up running a system, and he ran the Wishbone at the time, and he had rule blocking, which was, it wasn't like the zone blocking that we ran where you're just taking an area. You had an exact rule to remember. And it was second man down kind of defensive end is one. I can still remember some of the rules that you had. And learned a lot of football from him. Learned a lot of football from John Bendekovitz and from Randy Rice and from the Andy Molosky when Andy was there. I mean, you pick and choose a lot of the things that these guys do. Some of the good, some of the bad. I won't do that, but I'll do this and I'll do that. And that's how you become, I felt, a successful head coach. One of the things that I was talking to Richie about it, as a head coach, what I did is I coached the coaches and then they coached the team. And I was sort of just an overseer at practice walking around. And then I would have to yell at Michael all the time.
Was Louis Wolf there at the time in the early days at Whitehall?
No, Louis never
came
Louis,
over
no,
to Whitehall?
No, he stayed in Northampton. And Louis, the true gentleman that he is, he's still that way.
Well, Louis was with Joe when Joe started at Parkland. He was at Parkland for those 3 years. And then when Joe came to Whitehall from Parkland, I guess Louis must have gone back to Northampton at that point.
Yes, he did. And, you know, we had that team where Michael played. We were undefeated there. We had the District 11 championship. Right. A lot of people asked me, who was your best quarterback? Was it Schwenk? And I said, probably Schwenk, numbers-wise, was my best quarterback. But when you asked who was my best all-around quarterback, my answer to them is like Chris Hudak. Because with Schwenk, I'll be honest with you, we couldn't run an option. I mean, I could beat Chad in a 40-yard dash. And that was just the way. But Chad could throw the ball. He could throw the ball on a dime. I remember one day Michael comes home from supper and he says, Dad, you're always yelling at the linemen. We never do any good. And so I go to practice that day and I said to Andy Poloni, who was my quarterback coach, I said, Chad Schwenk will do nothing right today. But whatever crack I fill, you got to cement it. So we're running a play, and Chad throws a ball that, honest to God, it was like one of the best outs I've ever seen. It was from the boundary to the wide side of the field, put it on a target, and I'm screaming, where did you throw that? What? And he's looking at me like, but coach. And I turned around. I remember looking at Andy Poloni, go, oh, my God, that was a hell of a throw. That was like no kid in high school should make that throw.
Mike, you had a big smile as that story was being told by your dad.
The laugh to my story is, with the exception of Billy to my right here, our senior year when Chad was our quarterback, we actually had an offensive line that, if it wasn't for Billy, we wouldn't have averaged over 200 pounds, and every single one of us was faster than our quarterback. You don't get that too often. You have a quarterback who runs over a 5-flat 40, and everybody else on the offensive line runs under a 5-0 40. And it's just one of those things that. And by the way, that story where he said he yelled at Chad, I don't remember that happening. Billy, do you remember that happening at all?
No, I don't. But
You're supposed to say yes, Billy. You're supposed to say yes.
Yes, that totally happened.
Okay. I have him off the panel.
No, I have a question.
We couldn't hear him yelling at Chad because we're too busy with cotton in our ears from him yelling at us the 99.9% of the other practices that we had.
To be honest with you, that year was the easiest year to coach the offensive line. All I had to show them was the pass block. That was great. It was easy.
Makes it easy.
Have 35 passes a game, that was easy.
Let me ask you three guys a question. Bill, I'll start with you. What team did you like to play the most when you were in high school against?
I mean, it's really a toss-up. I just enjoy playing, period. So, I mean, every game was fun for me. Rivalry-wise, I would say probably Parkland or Northampton, either one of those two teams, because I just knew people on both teams. So,
how about the next one?
Well, I'll tell you right now, being a Whitehall guy, Parkland was always our rivalry. And I have to say, in Tony's tenure as head coach, we may have lost to Parkland one time.
Yeah.
All right, maybe two. But... No, I don't think it was five. Was it five? I don't know, but everyone I remember, it was a big game. We beat them in the district championship that year. To me, that was the biggest game of my life.
Let me go ahead.
I'm going to disagree. I mean, Parkland was a huge rivalry. It was one of those that got built up, the cornfield separated. But Central Catholic was the biggest rivalry, and it kind of got separated there for a year because the EPC broke up and it went to the Mountain Valley, and Central stayed in the East Bend, and Whitehall went to the Mountain. But we played them that one year, and it was you knew every single kid on Central, and they knew every one of us. We worked summer jobs together. We knew each other. You got it on the field, and it was one of those things where you didn't just want to beat Central, but you wanted to make your buddy look horrible.
Now, and let me – the flip side to that, guys, and this is why I asked you the question. Who did you not want to play in those days? Who was – what team did you really hate to have to go play? Bill, let's start with you, Coach.
Central Catholic. And it wasn't a matter that I didn't want to play them. It's just they ran that wing tee. So whatever you taught your defense, you had to say, forget what we taught you. We got to do this.
Yeah.
This week, it's we got to do it. If the guard pulls, you got to follow. If the guard goes away, you sit. If the guard comes to, you follow, blah, blah, blah. And it's like you just had to change it because it was a very difficult offense to get ready for. Sniz, we knew, was going to run the ball at us all the time. I enjoyed playing. I used to enjoy Northampton, and that goes back to when we were in high school. That was the rivalry across the river. I don't know if it was the big rivalry as it is back then as it is today, but I used to enjoy that. And Easton, by far, was my favorite place to go. I used to love to come out.
I was
going to
ask you about that. How did you have so much success at Cottingham all those years?
I just loved. I had the guys ready to play. I used to say to them all the time, first of all, we practice with music. Talk about Chip Kelly. Music going because that band drove you nuts. So I had to have practice with the boombox going. Number two, when I came out of the locker room, there was always that guy with that Easton State Championship, 1903, the crooked nose, the half a cigar.
Walk through the gauntlet.
And they always called me Coco. Coco, we're going to kick your butt. And it would be like one. But I just enjoyed the heck with the ghosts because there were no Whitehall. There are no Easton ghosts when Whitehall goes down to Easton. Yeah.
Guys, how about you? Who did you not like playing against?
I'm going to throw a big curveball at you right now. One of the toughest teams I've ever played against as a player and as a coach, Deriff.
Oh,
those kids
years,
would
yeah.
smack you in the mouth. It didn't matter if they were 7-2 or 2-7. They came to
coach
play.
March, yeah.
They were tough city blue-collar kids that just wanted to smack you in the mouth.
They had some pretty good football back in those days.
Absolutely,
I mean,
yes.
That was they had a great program.
Yes.
Bill, how about you? Who did you not like playing against?
I would have to go with Central Catholic, too.
Central
I mean,
Catholic
they were
too?
They were just beasts. I mean, they would come at you and just punch you in the face. I mean, it was definitely a test for any team to play against.
All right, we're going to take another break right here. Our special guests right here are Bill Natt, Rich Drula, Mike Coca. Thanks so much for joining us. Mike, are you sure you don't have any more dirt on your dad here? We want to get out. We can put it on the internet and everything.
How long's the show?
All right. Well, on that note, we're going to take a break. We're going to be back with some more special guests, some more special members of Whitehall football history right after this timeout.
You are listening to the RCN Sports Talk podcast. Send us a comment or question, or to participate in the program, email us at rcnsportstalk@rcn.com. And we might read and respond on an upcoming episode. You can also send us possible show topics and future guest suggestions by emailing chris.michael@rcn.net. If you catch the show live, you can call us at 1-844-234-4488 on Thursday evenings between 7 and 8 p.m. That number again, 1-844-234-4488. Stay tuned for more of the RCN Sports Talk podcast. To the RCN Sports Talk podcast. Send us a comment or question, or to participate in the program, email us at rcnsportstalk@rcn.com.
and we might read and respond on an upcoming episode. If you catch the show live, you can call us at 1-844-234-4488 on Thursday evenings between 7 and 8 p.m. Stay tuned for more of the RCN Sports Talk Podcast.
Welcome back, RCN Sports Talk, broadcasting live from Buffalo Wild Wings, Grape Street in Whitehall, honoring the football tradition at Whitehall High School. Before I introduce our special guest, though, we've had some fun here our shows this summer. And I got it in defense of Joe. He was supposed to be joined by three beautiful women here that I apparently have scared away. You were supposed to interview them, but we're so busy that they're involved in distributing some food right now.
You do have that effect on women, I know. Chris. But we do want to, before we get any further, we do want to thank the folks here at Buffalo Wild Wings. I tell you, the food here is great. If you haven't been here over by the Whitehall Mall, get here, have a meal. You're not going to be unhappy about it. In fact, Chris even had his wife and his son here tonight for dinner.
And he ate all my Buffalo Wings, too.
And he had to pay for the dinner, which if you know Chris, you'll know that there were a lot of moths coming out of his wallet. But great food. The people here are the best, and want to thank them for all their courtesies.
I heard you're picking up the tab for the Whitehall people.
Absolutely. Whatever you want.
I think you will. Absolutely. Them too. All right, let's welcome in, of course, Tony Coca is here and joined this segment by John Lobb, Greg Brusco, and Bob Brandmeier. Guys, you all have some great stories, so I want to step out of the way. Tony, you take it away here.
Well, these guys, I started, I think they were freshmen. They were on my freshman team. So they can tell you a story about the screaming and yelling and the guy that didn't know how to coach anything. And Bob, way down there, Bob was our booster club president, and he was very instrumental in making sure that we did so many things. Our trip to Florida, where we went down there and we beat the eighth-ranked team in the country when it was 50 degrees. Our kids were roasting to death, and I look across the field and the kids from Florida had hoods on and they were shivering and they couldn't get over the fact that we played the District 11 championship game at Parkland in an ice storm. And the coach came to me and goes, I couldn't get my kids not to watch the snow. But let's talk to the old timers here, and they can give you some real good jokes. John, how about we start with you?
Okay. Tony, actually, my freshman year, I was moved up to JV, so I never had the benefit of playing for Tony. And I was on a JV team that wasn't very good, and my years at Whitehall were very up and down. Our junior year was probably when we had the best defense in the Lehigh Valley. And our senior year, we struggled a little bit, but we had a great time, and I was real honored to be elected captain along with Greg, our friend Danny Faringer, and Bob Provoznik. But what really amazes me, you hear a lot of the stories from the first guys that were up from back in the day and everything else, but really a lot of the hard work, the principles of what they were talking about are still true at Whitehall today. You look at some of the guys from last year's team, Barkley, Buskirk, they hit harder than anybody on the field. And so it was always hard hitting, hard work, get in the weight room, and that's what I'm really proud of, is the fact that those principles are still coming through today.
And it's good you mentioned that, because, I mean, that tradition, you still talk to some of those players nowadays, they almost sound like they're players from the 80s or from the 70s, back when you guys played.
Yeah, and I heard Joe talking about it before. You never have an easy game when you play Whitehall.
Never.
I live in another school district that is a couple of cornfields over.
Would you like to name the school district?
Not here, I won't name the school district.
I got to try.
I'm very, very proud of, you know, my children that have gone through that school and the level of football that they played at, but never is it an easy game against Whitehall. You're going to come out of that one bruised and sore. So.
Greg, how about you? What memories do you think of when you think of Whitehall football?
I have to kind of laugh because I did play for Tony when he was a freshman. If I'm not mistaken, Tony was at Kutztown when my oldest brother was there, Mike, whose younger son played at Emmaus and then University of Maine. And I heard Rich say something about throwing the ball 35 times in a game. Well, we through Joe Gerenzer's error, you know, we ran a wishbone offense, and I was what they called an accessory guard, which was a tight end,
yeah,
because we never threw the ball. And I remember back then, you know, we still played Emmaus Turkey Day game because there weren't playoffs back then. And I remember our senior year, Joe in the locker room talking about how he was going to open it up. So I'm thinking, okay, we're going to open this up. I think what he meant was that we were going to throw the ball like six times that game instead of like three times that game. And Rich mentioned they threw the ball like 35 times or something like that. I don't think we threw the ball 35 times in 3 years that I recall anyway. No, 3 years of varsity that we played. I mean, but the weight room, it's interesting. And I bring up, John, you mentioned the weight room a little bit a while ago. I can remember the summers. You know, now I think we were really almost the generation that really started football being really kind of an 11-month-a-year sport, really. That generation back in the late 70s where we would lift all summer long, work out in the weight room, and that's carried over. My two boys played likewise at another school district in town in the Bethlehem area.
Ah.
Smart.
It's a Whitehall show, Joe. Quiet.
It is a Whitehall show, and I bring up war stories about my time at Whitehall with my kids now, and they kind of laugh at me, thinking we still wore leather helmets and stuff. I try to tell them we didn't do that, but it's great memories there. I mean, it was. Tony, you were a little modest actually when you said that you didn't really coach, or you couldn't coach, because the fact of the matter is it worked out all right for you. I think you ended up becoming a head coach at varsity. You were pretty successful there. You went to Muhlenberg for a while, so I think you're being a bit modest in terms of what you were able to accomplish from a coaching standpoint, starting out with guys like us at the freshman level.
Well, you got to understand, like I say to my team all the time, if I sat on Secretariat's backside, he still wins the Belmont. Not by 32, but he still wins. If you have athletes, and I think John Wooden said it, the athlete makes the coach doesn't make the athlete. So when you have great kids, great athletes, and you put a little bit of, throw a little bit of this and that together, obviously success is going to come that way. And when I look at my kids and I look at you guys, it was fun doing what we did. And I used to say to my kids, it wasn't the most important thing in your life, but at that time, it's the most important thing at that time.
Yeah.
And now I look at what you guys are doing with your lives, and I'm like, you sit back as a teacher and a coach and say, you know what, pretty proud of it, because the product that we put out, not only was they successful on the field, they're successful in life, and I think that's great.
Bob, a question for you. Now, you're coming from a different angle as a booster club guy, and you were very responsible, instrumental, I'm sure, in a lot of things that happened at Whitehall. Tell me a little bit about your involvement and how important the booster club has been to the program.
Oh, it's been very important. Actually, Tony actually recruited my wife, because my wife fundraised for the band for 3 years, and they were getting ready to go to Florida.
Yeah, always get the band people involved. They're good at it.
I needed somebody to know how to do it. So we go to that first meeting, okay, and nobody wants to be president. Somebody puts my name in, and I get it. We go home. My wife goes, you know, you're going to be the first one that's a booster club president to ever get assassinated. She was just about right. But no, it was great. You know, there's a lot of work, you know. We did a lot of fundraising. We helped the coaches out, getting their coaches' shirts, going to Florida. So,
well, my experience with booster clubs was there were two kinds of booster clubs. There was the kind of booster club that you really want to be involved in because they do all these great things. Then you have some booster clubs are a little more involved. Let's just put it that way. And as long as you keep it in perspective, you know, it's a great asset for a school to have, and I'm sure you did that.
Yeah, my vice president, Chuck Schwank, and John Sowersoff, who went to Whitehall, played for Temple. We had a meeting the one night, and we all agreed we got to leave it better than when we got there. And it was like, you know, they're the coaches. They make the decisions. We didn't care what, you know, how our kids panned out. They made the decisions, and we left it at that.
That's great. That's great.
Joe Gerenzer ran his locker rooms, and this is something I learned from Joe. Yeah. It was like you're like gunfighters coming off the street into the saloon. You hang your guns up on the wall, and we all got to sit there, and we can all have we work together. When we step outside, we may not like. And I used to say to my team all the time, it's like, I love my wife, but we don't get along all the time. I said, but I love her. So as a team, as long as you're playing between the white lines and you're all working together and doing what you need to do, we're going to be very successful. Outside, the outside influences that happen, you know, that's some of the things that coaches can't control. You try to. Now, I was one of those guys that used to say to the guys, look, you get in trouble, you're going to have to pay the price. I said, you're going to pay the price with the authorities, with whatever rules the schools does. But our rule, I had one rule on our football team. Don't embarrass yourself. Don't embarrass Whitehall football. Don't embarrass your family. If you can do that, life is going to be good. The old Marine Corps attitude, I guess, right? Stay disciplined on yourself.
Those are very valuable, I think, in all of us, you know, helping us grow up. I mean, John and I, you know, we're fortunate enough to go on and play in college. And then our children have had, you know, successful careers. They've evolved. John's has obviously two boys that played. My youngest is at New Hampshire right now. So I think the values that we developed at Whitehall through playing here, through the hard work and a lot of the blue-collar stuff, some of the comments that were made earlier, you know, I don't think those were lost in us. And in trying to raise our kids the way that we, even though we didn't grow up and our kids didn't play at Whitehall, sure as hell doesn't mean that our values weren't established in us as parents through our times coming through the Whitehall School District and playing for Whitehall, you know, quite a few moons ago. So I think it's been a very positive thing for us.
Absolutely. That has been the foundation of our family. You know, it was developed here in the Whitehall community, and that continues. Fortunately, I met a wonderful woman who shared the same type of values. She didn't grow up around here, but that really was the foundation of all three of our kids growing up, you know, to what was formed here in Whitehall.
And one more thing, that in the locker room, and you guys had that vivid memory, I don't know if it's still there, you walked in the locker room, every kid that went to college, his picture was up on the wall. And you would walk in, whether you went to Schneck Tech and played football, or you went to University of Michigan and played football, your publicity picture, where you went, what you did, and there was like a wall of fame up there, and you just walked around. And I used to, kids between sets would walk around and say, wow, I didn't realize that so-and-so played at Louisville. I didn't realize that so-and-so played. And it was like, I think that instilled a lot, too, that there was a pride at Whitehall that if you succeed at the high school level, the coaches are going to work real darn hard and get you at to the collegiate level. And then you succeed from there, then basically you're on your own. But it's instilled from the very beginning on that.
I remember in the weight room, and that was when Matt Millen was in his heyday at Penn State. And when Matt would be home for break, we would be lifting, and we'd be these young bucks in high school, and Matt would come to the weight room when he was home at Penn State and come downstairs and lift. And I can remember to this day just looking at him thinking, oh, my God, this guy plays at Penn State. Look at the size of him. Yep. So you're right, Tony. I mean, the pictures, and you'd see those people come back. And I'm guessing now, while I haven't been in that weight room in quite a few years, I'm guessing there's a few more pictures up there now than there was back in the 70s when we were there.
Yeah, and you said it, a guy like Millen, Copen, they come back and they walk in, and it's like they played in the big lights. They played in the Super Bowls. They played on the – but yet when they walk in the weight room, they're one of the Whitehall boys.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Now, well, Matt used to
come in with his overalls on. Yeah. I'll never forget it.
The other thing, too, is you think about the number of collegiate players that have come through the Whitehall program, the number of coaches that have been developed. You know, Bobby Cole and – all the guys that have played Division I, II, and III college football for a community this size and a school this size, to have that many people come through in all the decades is amazing.
All right, John Lobb, Greg Brusco, Bob Brandmeier, thanks so much for joining us this segment and for being part of this special show tributing Whitehall football.
Thanks for the opportunity.
All right, we're going to take our last break of the evening and be back with more special guests talking Whitehall football on this edition of RCN Sports Talk.
You are listening to the RCN Sports Talk podcast. Send us a comment or question, or to participate in the program, email us at rcnsportstalk@rcn.com, and we might read and respond on an upcoming episode. You can also send us possible show topics and future guest suggestions by emailing chris.michael@rcn.net. If you catch the show live, you can call us at 1-844-234-4488 on Thursday evenings between 7 and 8 p.m. That number again, 1-844-234-4488. Stay tuned for more of the RCN Sports Talk podcast. Listening to the RCN Sports Talk podcast. Send us a comment or question, or to participate in the program, email us at rcnsportstalk@rcn.com, and we might read and respond on an upcoming episode. If you catch the show live, you can call us at 1-844-234-4488 on Thursday evenings between 7 and 8 p.m. Stay tuned for more of the RCN Sports Talk podcast.
Welcome back, RCN Sports Talk, broadcasting live from Buffalo Wild Wings on Grape Street in Whitehall. Our final segment, paying tribute to Whitehall football. Our special guest for our last segment, joining Tony Coca, we have Mark Buskirk, Bob Klein, Brian Gilbert, the head coach, and John Moyer. You guys have some great stories. We'll try to get in as many as we can here. Bob, we'll start with you.
Okay, I got a story. Tony and I played together back in 1966. After 16, when we had our we were the last team in the Lehigh Valley to use leather helmets.
What year was this?
And Joe's over there laughing, and Joe probably used the leather helmets too. So if they ever forget something when they're on the air, it's because they use those leather helmets. And it would be like this. Nowadays, everybody's worried about concussions.
Well, it would be like this. If you got hit and you came out of the game, Doc Kohlacher would be there and say, how many fingers do I have up? You got two. Good. Go back in. All right? And talk about Whitehall football. This is how I learned about Whitehall football. We were up at Lehigh, and Lehigh was one of the few teams that had lights for a night game. And I was playing what at that time they called a monster back. And a guy named Marushak, who played center and linebacker, I don't remember his first name, Jim. And I got this, and Lehigh had the ball, and I was running this guy out of bounds, grabbed him, running out of bounds, and the next thing I know is, wham! Three of us guys are laying on the ground, and I'm thinking, who the heck kicked me? This is, I'm out of, you know, say, who hit me like this? What the heck, we were going out of bounds? Jim Marushak was laying on top of me and looked down at me and said, and that's how we play football at Whitehall. Don't forget it.
Well, Brian, you represent the current tradition at Whitehall, too, and maybe you can talk about what it, because I know it was important for you when you took over as head coach to honor that tradition.
Yeah, one of the things I did when I took over was to bring some of these guys back and tell these tremendous stories. And, you know, you could sit here for days and hear about the tradition of Whitehall football. So what I got a chance to do over the last 4 or 5 years is on Thursday nights at our team dinners, invite some of these guys back and tell these stories. And the current players just are in awe of the tradition and how rich and deep it goes to Whitehall football. And one of the guys sitting to the right of me, Mark Buskirk, you know, not only a player but a father of, you know,
familiar
a current
name.
Player. Yeah. And, you know, he talks and he helps me try to get some of these speakers, and we'd love to have these guys come in and talk to our players.
Mark, maybe you could talk for a minute or two about Whitehall football, what it means to you.
Well, am I on?
I'm good.
We talk about Whitehall football and all the tradition and everything else, and I heard you guys talking about Joe. Coach Gerenter, was my last year that Joe actually coached. And playing the California team and everything we went through, and I've heard Coach B, and I've heard different things about everybody doing. One thing that I was talking about Coach Girula, on the sideline, you got sign signals, everything else, and some of our signals were actually in Pennsylvania Dutch, which was very interesting. You know, we'd be like, we run the same thing over and over and over again. And another thing that was the way Coach Coca was talking about the locker room, everything was prim and proper, the way you kept your spikes, the way you did things in the locker room. Everything was very regimented. But Coach is doing a great job keeping the Whitehall tradition going on. I love talking to kids. It's a continuation of what we've been doing for this whole thing. Small community, and we still keep pumping the kids out.
John,
doing a great job.
John, we only have about a minute left, but what sticks out in your mind when you think of Whitehall football?
I think of all the great coaches and all the great players. As Coach talked about, the culture of the kids coming up and their parents teaching them the work ethic, the hard work ethic, and it's not going to be easy. And one of the first games I think my dad took me to was that California game. El Toro came to play you guys. And
back in 86.
Just lost, and that was the first game I've ever seen. Yeah. So taking your kids when they're very young to the games was exciting. And I went to a lot of football games growing up. I didn't play Little League football until eighth grade. So everything I learned about football, I learned from Coach Koch and his staff. But we played football on the sidelines outside the track during the whole football game. And, you know, we watched a little bit. Somebody scored. We had a great time. But Coach, some of my best friends are still on my high school football team, and I'll never forget the lessons I learned from Coach Coca and his staff.
And that 86 year was special. That was your first district championship for football, I believe. Yep. All right, my thanks, Tony. Great job organizing this. Thanks to all your former players and Brian for being here and all the great memories shared here tonight.
Go Zephyrs.
All right. Don't forget, we have our preview show for high school football coming up next week. Our thanks to everyone for joining us here at Buffalo Wild Wings. For Joe, I'm Chris. Good night, everyone.